From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of December. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the price of soybeans with Dan O'Brien from K-State, Gary Schnitke from Illinois Extension. We'll discuss the upcoming ARC PLC decision. Ben Brown of Missouri University Extension is here to take up soybean crush, and we'll check out the weather forecast with Don Day. In Chicago today, corn futures were up about 3 cents, soybeans up 2. Wheat futures about 5 higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan O'Brien now joins us from K-State Extension. He's penned an article about soybean exports and the potential impact it could have on the price of soybeans over the coming months. Posted it to the agmanager.info website. Dan, thank you so much. Can you tell me a little bit about the article?
Well, I think that the main issue that's a surprise to this market is how tight the stocks are and stocks to use. So we're, the USDA came out in their December 10th report, projected a 3.86%, well, basically 3.9% stocks to use, 175 million bushels. And you're getting awfully close to where we were back in 2012-13 when we were around 100 million bushels, and down, I think the minimum we'd had was 2.65. The thing that strikes me, Todd, is that there's the possibility of pretty strong export demand, particularly with dryness down South America, or at least that I know that comes and goes in terms of what the weather reports are saying. But you know, when I look at the scenarios of where we could be going, where we would go if we had to draw more than the USDA's projection of 2.2 billion bushels, well, there's hardly anywhere to go, you know, because we would literally have to start cutting back domestic crush to go much higher with exports. It looks to me like you could keep the USDA's balance sheet unchanged across the board, except for adding 50 and then 100 million bushels to their projection, and basically you get down to 125 to below 100 million bushels down to 75, and we're teetering on that edge. You know, economists talk about inelastic parts of the demand curve. We're sitting there at 1055 at 3.86 stocks to use, unheard of to where we thought we might be a year or so ago. If we try to crunch this thing, tighten it up even more, and basically get the brooms out to sweep around the inside of the bins to get everything, you know, we're at the place where, instead of 1055, if we had to go there, you're jumping up pretty explosively up to $12, up to $13, et cetera. So, you know, nobody wants to be an over panicker on these things, but the USDA didn't raise that number. I would contend because they didn't have much room to raise it at all, without getting into areas that would force them to really raise their price forecast sharply in a way that would have had quite a psychological impact on the soybean market.
So at 175 million bushels in the tank, you're saying 1055 current situation, correct?
Right.
And then if we go, you talked about 12 bucks, you laid that out as what, 125 million bushels for the ending stocks?
Yeah, basically if you add 50 million bushels to the USDA's projection, you're tight enough where you've tipped over the edge of saying that you're not that worried about the outcome. You know, you can't say that anymore. Then if you add not 50, but then 100, you get up to first to 2.250 and then up to 2.3 billion bushels, well, you know, you're getting to where you just don't have any more supply to be working with, you know, not with seed usage and a little bit of residual. So it's a constrained deal, and it affects us in Kansas some, but over where you're at in Illinois, in the heart of where we grow a bunch of soybeans, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, you name it, it's a big thing. I do wonder, and I wonder if people that you talk to there in the Illinois market are concerned about or wondering about how acreage. Well, first, how price expectations would be affected in the spring and where we go in terms of planted acreage for soybeans.
Yeah, well, they haven't really begun to discuss it a lot. Yeah, and so we'll see what that looks like, I suppose. And what you're telling me is there could be an acreage battle yet to come.
I don't doubt that there will be with prices like this for beans, and the corn folks don't want to, quote, be left out. And they, when you look at the type of prices that we're seeing for new crop bids for corn versus soybeans, and I know your folks in Illinois, that you know they're sharp on that in terms of what they watch and comparing to cost of production and profitability issues. Here we have Dease corn. Last I looked, it's been trading around 415 to 420. November soybeans about 1086 to 1080 to 1090. And what I'm saying is, if we continue to have strong demand pull from China, other parts of the world for soybeans, and we start to jump, you know, 50 cents, a dollar higher for beans, then you're right square in the psyche and decision-making framework of our farmers. And you know what? I think what I would do if we go that way, if that scenario develops, I would gladly take the pricing opportunity, but then look to do some forward pricing just because of what could happen if we do see quite an expansion in U.S. soybean acres and they all come to fruition. We have a great year and we find ourselves on the other side of this coin come fall of 2021.
Yeah, there is one flip side that we have not yet talked about, and it's also in your article on agmanager.info. That's D, or the fourth option, which is where the export market does not pick up 50 or 100 million bushels.
Well, and you know, I really, the name of that one is geopolitical conflict, you know, or something that would come into that's beyond just pure ag need, but you know, conflict in the South China Sea or between China and the U.S. and countries in that area over Taiwan or something. At that point, then I think beans still flow, but they're slower. You know, they don't go as direct to where it's needed. But there is the possibility of something like that happening. And instead of 2.2 billion bushels, we drop to 150 million down to, well, you know, to around 2 billion or 2.150, something like that. Then we still are historically tight. You're at 4 to 4.5 to 5%. Prices are closer than to 940, 950. So basically a dollar lower, still tremendous prices. But on the way there, if that scenario does come about, you'll have lost. There'll be a lot of people that will have looked at these pricing opportunities, not acted, and there'll be a lot of regret.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State Extension. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ben Brown now joins us from the University of Missouri in Columbia, where he's a member of the FAPRI, or Food Ag Policy Research Institute. Thanks so much for being with us again today. You've been taking a look at soybean crush, which has been just on a tear of a rate for the fall. What are you finding?
You're right. Soybean crush has been incredibly strong, and it really even started all the way back in November of 2019. We've just continually, month over month, seen really strong crush numbers. When we look at the November soybean crush numbers that came from the National Oilseed Processors Association that were released on the 15th of December, the month of November set a new monthly record for the month, for November. That followed the all-time monthly record in October. So we came in at 181 million bushels of soybeans crushed in November. October, it was 185.2 million bushels. And I remind folks that the National Oilseed Association represents about 95% of soybeans crushed for soybean meal and oil. So very strong numbers. That sets new monthly records all 3 months of this marketing year so far in September, October, and November. And you know, we have seen a weakening a little bit in that soybean crush in the month of November, the crush margin, but it has held strong, and we continue to see processors continue to crush soybeans. When we look down the road at what could come for soybean crush, there's a lot of potential to see that continue to strengthen. Now, granted, soybean prices continue to rise, which lowers that soybean crush margin. The inputs are becoming more expensive for those processors. But when we look at the demand side of the equation, there's a lot of positives that could continue to spur more demand for U.S. soybean meal. Argentina is having some labor issues, plus their currency is creating an environment where producers just don't want to sell soybeans into the market. They'd rather have their soybeans sitting in the bag. And so that, coupled with their labor protests that they've got right now, is spurring an environment where it's very hard to get soybeans even processed, but even once they're processed, just getting them to the ports and getting them on ships to send. And that becomes important when we look and see that Argentina represents about 41 to 43% of the world soybean trade, soybean meal trade. They don't export a lot of whole soybeans, but they export a lot of soybean meal. And, you know, we see some of that demand coming to the United States because there's just not a lot of other places that have the soybean meal processing like what the United States has or Argentina. China's been building their soybean meal facilities as well. We've seen them slow down as the margins have come down as well. But nonetheless, soybean meal seems to be, a strong part in the U.S. balance sheet. I know all the talk is on the export side of the equation, but we've had really strong domestic consumption of soybeans as well.
Yeah, so I want to ask about the domestic consumption. Is that part and parcel of fewer DDGs being available from the ethanol industry?
Yeah, it was early on. As we slowed down ethanol production, had the price of DDGs really shot up, especially in comparison to corn price. That created an environment where soybean meal was in larger demand here domestically. And I do think that some people stayed with soybean meal just because the price was competitive to DDGs. Now, DDGs have come down, making it a more price competitive environment in those least cost rations. But we continue to see livestock feeders use larger amounts of soybean meal than what we saw prior to the pandemic, which just, again, it's a price environment comparison, we're looking for the least cost option when it comes to feed. And soybean meal continues to provide that. When we look at other competitive sources like seed cotton and stuff like that, it's just soybean meal continues to be decently competitive compared to where we were prior to the pandemic.
And of course, having meal making a run requires that oil has a place to go.
Correct, yeah.
Soybean oil, that is. Has it been finding a home?
Well, soybean oil is one of those things that we have seen. It's easier to transport in some ways because, we can stick it in tanks until you run out of tanks. And that's been the issue with soybean oil a little bit is – a lot of the products that use soybean oil, whether that's biodiesel or some of the other stuff, or just the soybean oil in general, takes liquid tanks to hold it. And with gasoline stocks increasing and we have ethanol stocks increasing, the tank space and the storage cost is what's been a little bit of the challenge on the soybean oil side of the equation. And so some of it has just been wasted, nowhere for it to go, or it costs too much to get it to a right spot. But on the flip side of that, it does help spur innovation because it makes it easier for people to get access to the product and come up with different uses of it. But yeah, soybean oil has probably been the one that is the most interesting to watch, just given the transportation logistics that go along with soybean oil.
Do you see, and we've talked about this on the radio program with a couple of the analysts over the last month or so, a push for soybean oil to be used to a greater extent as a biofuel, even prior to the Biden administration taking place in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, we've seen a little bit of a, I don't know what to call it besides a boom. That's probably the best term I have for it, of renewed interest in biodiesel facilities. And it reminds me a little bit of the beginning stages of the ethanol boom, a little bit. There's a little bit of renewed interest in it. Now, am I sitting here saying that biodiesel is going to become just like ethanol did 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Probably not. That would be my assumption. But we do have this exciting feel about biodiesel, really ramping up capacity or production. And so, yes, I would agree. That's been happening even before the Biden administration came into office, or as they start to make the transition into office. We've seen this interest over the last couple of months of this, exciting mini boom, if you will, in biodiesel. So,
hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Brown is an extension agricultural economist at the University of Missouri and a member of the FAPRI team there. Now let's check the weather forecast. But Don Day, he's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Hey, thanks for taking the time with us today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Me too.
Tell me about the winter weather here in the United States.
Well, we are certainly going to go into the last days of December with a pattern that is going to look and feel a lot more like winter for really a good share of the U.S. We really got winter going with that big northeast storm, that mid-Atlantic storm last week that deposited up to 4 feet of snow in some areas of the northeast United States. Now, we have seen temperatures rebound and gotten a little more mild after that, but we're going to see later this week and into the weekend and into the week between Christmas weekend and the weekend after New Year's Day, getting a lot more busy coast to coast. We're going to see more in the way of winter weather, colder temperatures, and it does look like the Midwest and Corn Belt will have some better chances for seeing some accumulating snow as we get on into the next 7 to 10 days.
What do you think weather will look like in this part of the world over that time frame?
Well, it certainly is going to start to turn colder as we get to the right around Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. We do see a trough swinging out of the high plains and ushering in some wind and some colder temperature readings. In fact, you're going to see temperatures dropping considerably as we get into that time frame of late Thursday into Friday and Saturday. Temperatures are going to be the coldest probably Christmas morning. You know, we're looking at temperatures that will be down into the teens in many areas, even some single digits across parts of the eastern Great Lakes. We'll have a little bit of a warm-up after that, and then the middle to the end of next week as we ring in the new year, we're going to see another cold front come in, and it looks colder.
What does January look like, in your opinion, or the winter months?
Well, as we look ahead into January, we've got a really big battle going on between a moderately strong to strong La Nina, which is creating a really strong and active jet stream across the northern Pacific, then across the United States. And when they get real strong like this, those jet stream winds, you have a tendency to bottle up that Arctic air and not have big, long-lasting Arctic intrusions. However, in those higher latitudes, we're seeing that cold air really building up. And I think there's a real possibility into at least the first 2 weeks of January, somewhere in the lower 48 states is going to experience the coldest temperatures of the season to date.
All right. Hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnicki, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, now joins us to discuss the ARC PLC decision that farmers and landowners will be needing to make in the coming months as it relates to the farm safety net that Congress has had in place for some time. This is the second sign up for this particular farm bill. The first one was good for the 2019 and 2020 years, but going forward, every year, producers will need to make an ARC and PLC decision, and that'll be based largely on, I think, Gary Schnitke, what producers think the price of corn, soybeans, and wheat will be in the coming months.
That is exactly right, Todd. And again, farmers, for the remainder of this farm bill, we'll have a decision to make by March 15th, the same day as crop insurance final date. So farmers have the opportunity this year to not only set their crop insurance policy, but their commodity title program. And again, that will continue throughout this year. And as they're looking at those decisions, waiting isn't necessarily a bad thing, because we'll know more about what prices look like. But we're already getting questions about what that choice should be. And I guess we would sort of focus on, for corn, think about PLC. Soybeans, maybe ARC County, although that's a tougher call, and wheat, probably PLC. Having said that, at the prices we're looking at right now, none of these commodity title programs are going to make any payments, but PLC for corn, if we get back into the 370 or below the reference price, that's that PLC program will make payments.
And soybeans were way above the reference price.
Yeah, way above the reference price. The reference price is $8.40, and it would take a long time to get anywhere close to that.
Just looking back at last year, we wouldn't have triggered a PLC payment for soybeans, right?
No, we would not have triggered a payment for PLC for soybeans. The reference price for soybeans looks low relative to where price levels have been. Corn has been running very close to that reference price throughout the last 3, 4, 5 years. Again, we're above those prices right now, although on corn, we're closer to that reference price than we are on soybeans.
Yeah, so just to go back through it, the reason that Arc County works for soybeans is if there is a production shortfall.
Yeah, there's a couple things PL or Arc County for soybeans. It's the production shortfall, and since we're so far above the reference price on the price side, it's the production shortfall may trigger a payment. And the benchmark price for soybeans will still be above the reference price, so there's a bit more price protection in that soybean program.
And the reason PLC works for corn is it's a revenue generation, not a production generation.
Yeah, so PLC for PLC will make payments when price is below this reference price. And the reference price is $3.70, or the effective reference price is $3.70, and there's still a reasonable chance for 2021. And it's the 2021 price that will matter for this decision. There's a possibility that will be below $3.70.
All right. So this isn't the final from you on this one. There's a whole
no. This is not the final from us. Again, people are getting a little bit anxious here, asking us questions, and we will be doing a webinar series in January and February, talking about risk management decisions, and that will discuss the ARC PLC decision as well as ECO, which is new this year.
And what that stand for? Enhanced.
Enhanced coverage option, ECO. So that program will allow a farmer to take a county level product from 90% coverage level or 95 down to 86%. So a person that buys a 85% RP policy could now get through RMA another policy that gives an extra 90 or 95% coverage level, but it's based on county revenue, not farm revenue.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll watch the Farm Doc Daily website for an update on when those webinars are coming, and we'll look for more on the Farm Doc Daily website now. The ARC and PLC decision, too, in the future, I take it.
Yes, we will. Have a good new year.
You too, Gary. Gary Schnutke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.